Hello, we are Angela Benjamin
and David J. Lilly,
and we are both jewellery designer makers who spend every day surrounded by shiny things.
We are both passionate about jewellery
and love learning all we can about jewellery making and sharing what we've learned with you.
Perhaps you're a jewellery lover or creative type, or spend your days at the bench like we do.
Whichever it is, we hope you'll enjoy our sparkling chit-chat, our silly stories, and our thoughts on living a creative and slightly dusty life.
With a few laughs along the way.
You can find our podcasts on all your favourite apps, including, of course, the biggies, Apple, Spotify, and Chrome Podcasts.
So if you want to know who we are and share our passion for all that glitters, then stay with us for the next 30-ish minutes.
This is
Ange
and David with Little Gems on Jewellery
and Life.
Good morning, everybody. This is David, and David by himself again, because Ange is on holiday still in Portugal. But I'm not exactly by myself, because I am with the lovely Lee Appleby. Good morning. Or I should say to you, Lee, because I'm in Canada and you're not. You're back in the UK, in Wales. Good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon, David. Hope you're well.
Very good, thank you. And you, how is the new year? And we're almost through January already, treating you.
Yeah, it's going so quickly. I've got lots of little leads I've got to follow up. Work is slow to start, but I think January always is. So it's all okay.
Yeah, good. And how are the family doing? Have they recovered from Christmas and New Year now?
Well, Luca has just gone back to university.
Right.
So he's had sort of 6 weeks off, pretty much. My daughter, Ella, she was home for 2 days, Christmas, Boxing Day, and then she was back on tour with the ballet company that she's with at the moment, and she finishes that tour this Saturday coming. So she's been away. We haven't seen her. So,
and what ballet is she actually performing in?
They're doing Swan Lake and the Nutcracker. So
fantastic!
Yeah, she's Big Swan in Swan Lake, and she's doing a variety of things within the Nutcracker as well. So it's been a full on tour. She's absolutely shattered, but loved every minute.
Fantastic. And how's Luca doing at uni?
All right. It's his first year, so they're really only just starting to get going. So he just wants to get on with it. They like chalk and cheese. He's very studious, whereas Ella is the artsy side. So, he's
an actor. Right, something I'm definitely not and have never been.
No, not me.
I was really surprised when I ended up going to uni, but then I was 51 at that point and I was very much a mature student. And it wasn't exactly an academic course I did anyway. It was 3D design and craft, so it's totally practical. So in that respect,
yeah,
I was like the proverbial kind of pig in shit in enjoying it because I was making stuff every day.
That's what it's all about.
Yeah, absolutely. Talking about making stuff, you have an amazing studio, which some of us occasionally get a look into when you're doing your little videos on Instagram. But tell us about the space that you work in. What's it like? So people get an idea of, if they're thinking about you and where you're working, you know, what is it?
It's not a big area. Oh, gosh, it's probably about 8 foot wide by about perhaps 20 foot long. It's sort of a little bit bigger than a standard garage, I suppose, if you like.
Right.
So within that, because I still do a little bit with the stained glass, the John Ditchfield glass going into the jewellery, as you know yourself, glass gets everywhere. So I've got a small sort of cubicle sort of area that I use for grinding and cutting glass, almost turning it into veneers to go back into the silver and gold mounts for the jewellery. So that's a section that's separate, because obviously you don't want those nasty bits and bobs flying around in the jewellery workshop. So it works for me. Like I said, it's not huge. I would like a bigger space, but at the moment, it works for me.
And at this time of year, the smaller space is easier to keep warm as well, isn't it? I know my studio.
Well, this is it.
I've got, at this time of year.
Well, I've got a little log burner, so
that's brilliant.
Great. But I spend most of the time sat around the fire and not working, so it's not always a good thing.
No, get that one. In fact, I'm not allowed that in my barn at all, so I just have to have electric blow heaters that do absolutely sod all to keep me warm, but get the impression of warm. So talking about work, you've been creating a whole load of new work, I've noticed, kind of running up to Christmas, lots of different pieces. What's inspiring you at the moment in your work?
everything and anything, really. I suppose a lot of it always comes back to nature. You sort of, where we are in Wales, we're sort of just on the edge of the countryside. We're sort of not in town. We're just on the outskirts. So mm-hmm. wherever you go walking with the dog, or, you know, just on a little jaunt out in the car shopping, there's always something to see, be it within the shadows or the sunlight or different shapes and different forms,
yep.
different depths of decay in trees and flowers. Sometimes it just sparks a little something to get you going. But the thing that's I sort of been trying to put a bit of time to one side for myself to just play. And I really want to get more involved with the engraving, the hand engraving side of things. Not so much in sort of lettering or names or anything, but just textures.
Wow.
I love my textures. So I've been messing around a little bit with the Florentine cutting. And that's something I want to push more now this new year with the wedding bands and things like that. So it's just something that I've always wanted to try and finally had the time to have a good go at it. So it's getting there. It's not easy, but I'm enjoying it myself.
That's the main thing, yeah. I mean, a lot of these techniques are not easy when you start them. I know I make a mess for a very long time before I actually produce something that's worth looking at. But that's half the fun of it, isn't it?
It's definitely, yeah, yeah. It's the trying, and try not to hurt yourself too much.
Yeah, yes, that's the truth. Yeah, especially if you're using sharp gravers. You don't want to be stabbing your hands all the time.
Yeah, it's not good.
No, especially in a cold workshop, it's easier to slip, I always find, than it is in the summer.
Yeah, this is what I've found the last week, 10 days. It's been very cold here for us. So I've just been sort of doing a little bit on the website and things like that because it's just been too cold to work. Yeah, and you don't feel like working. It's all right once you get to the bench and get going and get the fire going. But just to start in the first place is, right, I'll go back, you know, have another cuppa and try again later. Yeah,
I know that one. I mean, I think just before we came out here in December, I was in studio and it was the coldest it had ever been in there. And it was 1.5 degrees when I walked in. I thought, this is never going to warm up. This is a waste of time being here today.
Well, this is it. This is when your pickle starts to freeze, isn't it? It's crazy. Yeah, yeah. You know, go home. That's when that happens. Just go home. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Go and do something else. Go and do some boring admin or something. As you say, or update the website. So when you are making, I mean, I know for me, my biggest fear is soldering, because I always fearful when I'm soldering that I'm going to melt the thing and kind of end up with a blob of metal and have to start again. But is there for you a fear that you have to overcome when you're working?
It's not so much with soldering, because I was working for a small local jewellers for sort of 15 years, just at the bench every day with repairs. So we saw a lot of different things. In that time, I was working with a microweld, a very small flame, like a little needle flame. So I think give you the confidence to get in and out of tiny spaces where there's stones and things without too much damage, if you like, because it's a customer's repair. You know, you've got to treat it with the utmost respect and you can't afford to make mistakes. So soldering isn't something that I fear, but I understand fully what you mean. But it's more so when I'm working on a customer's prized possessions, you know, heirloom materials and pieces, you can't make mistakes. Or if you do, you've got to be able to put it right.
Yeah.
So it's just, I think stone setting is my big fear. It's something that I've not, as you know, I've not been sort of properly trained or anything. It's just I've sort of went into this shop, started learning and was left to get on with things. So it's now that I'm finally starting to mess around setting stones and finding my own way, perhaps not the right way, but it works. So that's something that this year, again, I want to build on. There's an old, I shouldn't call him old, there's a chap I know who was a stone setter for Alabaster and Wilson up in Birmingham, up in the quarter for many years.
Right.
And he's just retired. He retired last year. And I'm hoping that we can get together now that he's no longer working. And he can sort of guide me the right way to go and just tell me where I'm going wrong. Because I don't know what half the gravers are for, what they're supposed to be used for. So it'll just be, right, this is what this is for. This is how you sharpen it. And it's just having that insight to what they do and how to do it. And I know a lot of people have got these GRS Gravamat pneumatic. I would love to have one there, but I don't know how to use it. So I think if I go to basics and learn how to hand set these stones, then that will then bear me in good stead for when I do get one of these machines. So it's stone setting is something that I've got to push myself to do because it's holding me back a little bit in other aspects of the jewellery world. So it's, again, it's a personal progression that's something I've got to tackle. So I suppose stone setting is my fear.
No, I totally understand that. I mean, it's just something that Ange and I have discussed at length because she's always avoided stone setting unless it's simply been, you know, a rub over and that's been it. So she's spending time this year doing a lot of training around stone setting. And it's something that, given the time, I will definitely do as well. I went to the Goldsmiths just for a weekend course last year and I learned so much in 2 days. Yeah. It was amazing. And what was lovely, it's like what you were just saying, you use the old tools, you do it the old way. We didn't do it anything that in the needed power, so you could sit there in the pitch dark and do it if you needed
this to. Is everything. It I think that it feels more handmade that way. And I sort of like yourself, I'm a lover of glass, so looking back to the times of Lalique and the jewelry that was made then, what they did with basically no electricity and candles is fantastic, you know. And they put us to shame today the way they used to make this fine jewellery with such basic tools. It's scary, you know.
It really is. I think we're very lucky in that respect. And we don't necessarily understand that because we had no concept other than we knew it was dark. We knew they had hand tools and that's it. But yeah. On the opposite side of that coin, what really brings you lots of joy when you're making jewellery?
Setting a stone nicely, as we said. I suppose I get a lot of, a fair bit of remodeling work where people will come with grandma's broken jewellery or they want, some of it is being shared out between sisters and they want something. They don't always know what they want, but they've got these materials that they want to use. Right. So it's lovely then to sort of have their involvement and then get to the finished product and you know, there's tears, there's usually always tears that they're so pleased to have this piece of jewelry that they can take with them everywhere they go, so mum or grandma or dad is always with them. I think that's the best thing, is making these special pieces for these special people that are going to last their lifetime, hopefully, that they can pass on, and something that they will wear, not stick in a drawer. It's something that's going to be practical for them. So it's those sort of practical everyday pieces that are sentimental. I think they bring me the most joy. It's lovely to see their faces when they you know, because it could have been just a pile of old rubbish, all broken, missing stones, and then all of a sudden you've got this lovely, polished, sparkling piece of jewellery, and it's just fab. It is fab.
Has there been a favourite commission that you've created that you can tell us about?
That's a tough one. Got to think, because I was going through old photographs, like I said, this last week, sort of updating the website. Yeah. And I suppose there's been a few. There was one that turned out, it was something new for me. It was working with granulation, something that I'd not really messed with before. But a lady had a couple of rings. One was white gold, one was yellow gold, both 18 carat, I seem to recall. One was an opal with a halo cluster.
Oh, okay.
He wanted everything new. So we had little diamonds, this sort of, I think it was about a 6 mil wide oval opal capuchon, and a couple of little diamonds, and it's white and yellow gold, but she wanted it all. And I was thinking, how am I going to do this? You know, because she had more yellow than white. And in the end, we come up with the band and the main body of the ring up with the yellow gold. And then with the bits of 18 karat white that we had left from the settings, we turned them into these little granulated balls and we'd intersperse them with the yellow gold and we'd sort of stick them all on. Obviously, the opal went back central. You had this big cluster all around and little diamonds set in between all the granulations. And it really did work. I think I've just put it up on the website in the bespoke sort of the previous works.
Okay.
And it was fab. It was just so different. And she gave me full sort of open rein on this. So there was no restriction. She just said, right, it's all got to be used, but I don't care. Yeah. So thankfully she loved it. You know, it was
brilliant.
It's a proper dress ring. You know, it is for special occasions. You couldn't really wear it every day because of the opal. You know, it is there on top exposed, but that was nice. A little bit different.
Excellent. So when it comes to kind of making jewelry, do you kind of lean towards what can be worn more often, or do you lean towards things that are for special occasions?
Yeah, I think it's because of how I started with jewelry, that it was repair work and you was always trying to make things wearable. So, right. And this... I think this bit me really during the show, because I was always think with my remit, I don't want anything poking out that was going to get caught on anything and ripped off.
Yeah,
I think that's the way I should have gone, was the more fashion, and rather than making it sensible and it's wearable. I think that tripped me up a little bit. So I've always looked at it as a practical piece, something that somebody can wear all the time. I have had one or two people come along that have wanted something spiky and out there, and that's great, but usually I'm always thinking that it's got to be practical, which isn't it's probably not the best fashion way to go, but I suppose it's just whenever we've done anything, we've always done the best we can to make it last longer, be it, you know, painting and decorating in the house or a bit of woodwork. You've always, like, we're trying changing parts on the car, we'll always get us the best part we could get rather than just a cheap one, so it would last longer. So I suppose, I'm one of four boys. We grew up, we didn't have a lot. There was always food on the table and things were made to last. You know, your clothes were passed down. Thankfully, I was the oldest. So I got first dibs. But the next brother down to me, I'll never forget when he was probably about 8 or 9. He came out with, what am I, Yucks fam kid? Because he always had hand-me-downs. So I'll never forget that. And we all just burst out laughing at the time, which, you know, wound him right up. But we've always sort of made do and made things last. So I suppose that's where it's come from, is trying to make things last for people. Because there is so much of the modern jewellery that's made quickly, machine-made. Mm-hmm. And it comes in for alteration, and it's not really built to be altered. You know, it's hollowed out in the shoulders. And So you always try and do your best to make things last. So I suppose,
understandable. So talking about the show, obviously I found All the Glitters opened up lots of avenues for me, but now it's kind of 2 years on for you since All the Glitters, but thinking about, you know, how at the time when it was live on the BBC, what did that do for you? Did you things that you were unexpectedly? What was it like?
It was a funny time for us, really. We started filming just before COVID hit. So we was 3 weeks in, and everything was shut down. So it was a weird time. So when we was finally allowed to go back, we all went back and had to stay there to get it finished, those that were still in. And then there was just this big, big delay before it came out. First of all, it was going to be just before Christmas. And I think it ended up, was it May?
Yeah, I think it was April or May.
Yeah, so it was well over 12 months later that it came out. So it was a funny time. And of course, we couldn't go anywhere. People were still wearing masks. So where perhaps we could have gone out and got ourselves out there and seen, you couldn't do that. It was a funny old time. It was a funny old time. Yes, we had lots more, or personally had more little jewelers like myself following you, but it wasn't bringing any orders in, if you like.
Yeah
it was sort of up and down, you know. It was great and it was surreal and I loved every minute of it. I met some fantastic people, not just all the people, all the other contestants, but the staff and the crew at the School of Jewellery there, but the TV company and everything. It was fantastic meeting all and making these new connections, which has led on to meeting you guys, the next contestants, which again has opened up new friendships there. And so it has been fantastic. It just didn't bring in the work that I thought it might. But that said, it definitely has raised my profile, because people do come to you and say, oh, yeah, we've seen you on the show. So it has worked. But I think it's taken a long time to sort of filter things through. So
I'd agree with that. Yeah, definitely.
It was just an unfortunate time for us that it all kicked off when it did.
Yeah, absolutely. And thinking about the show as well, obviously your piece that stood out for me, and I probably stood out for you, because it was picked by the drag queen whose name now escapes me.
Glamroom.
Absolutely, yeah. Was made from alternative materials. Now I like working in alternative materials. This look on your face says never again. So alternative materials, a yes, a no, or maybe. What is it for you? Would you use them?
Well, it was strange because I just remember reading the notes, and one of the alternative materials and one of the things was fluff, and I just I've only ever jewelry, silver and gold, and I used to teach an adult education class, and they'd always be asking, "Can we use copper?" And no, it's a silver class. You're not using copper. Obviously, this came up that it was alternative materials, and there was copper. So I thought, right, I'm going to have to use it this time. But I just remember seeing fluff on the list of things you could use, and I think, fluff? How can you use fluff? So it was crazy, but it was the one I was dreading the most, and it turned out to be the one that I enjoyed the most. Because it opened up so many new avenues for me, because I've never been to college. I've never had a chance to play with different things. So, and this is what I was getting from Nicola, and oh, this reminds me of when we was in second year doing our jewelry course. And I'm thinking, I haven't had this opportunity. So it was daunting to start with, but it was my favorite one. And yeah, I got chosen. I didn't think for a minute that it would get picked, but what they didn't show on the show was I was walking to the other side of the studio, so the other side of the workshop, looking at the piece on the mannequin to see if it had that visual impact from the cheap seats, which is something that they had said when they was talking about what they wanted. So that's what I was doing. I kept wandering over into the corner. I know Dan at one point was looking at me, "Silly, what you up to?" And then he could see what I was doing. But I was trying, because I kept thinking, is it too big? But then I'd walk over and it looked okay. So,
Yeah,
and
they're
thankfully it
great.
paid off. Yeah, it paid off. But no, I'm out of using the copper. I came home and I was just playing around with making up some little copper rings. So I soldered it up with just a sort of six mil wide band with some texture on, soldered it up with silver, and we had that beautiful summer. And I was sat there in shorts, and I looked down, and I got quite a nasty scar on the back of my leg. And then I looked at the join in the copper, in the silver, and thought, it looks like a scar, just like my leg. We've always been taught to hide our joints, make them invisible so people can't see where you've been in and sized or repaired. And I thought, well, no, let's enhance this and celebrate this scar. And it became my first real collection, which was called the Stitch Collection. So what I did was put silver stitches as well over that nasty joint and elaborated on that seam. And then it went on to make silver ones, gold ones, and they worked really well.
They
And out of
do. They
that
look
one,
fantastic.
have you seen them? Yeah.
I
Yeah,
have,
out of
yes.
that one stitch idea, there came the trumpet stitch, where you get a very tall setting that's got the stitches on the side of the joint. There's the cross stitch, which is like a little X, which came out last year with the X ball mark. So that was fantastic. So it is thrown out a few more collections from that, and there's more to come still off that one thing. But alternative materials was never a thing. Like I said, and when I went back to class to teach the class after they'd seen it, I didn't half get some stick. You told us we can't use copper, and there you are on the telly using. So from then on, we did, we started using different things. And yeah, I think you've got to try everything. And that's what the show taught me, was to just have immerse yourself into everything. Don't think about it too much, just get on with it.
Brilliant. So on that note then, thinking about alternative things, if you were a fruit, what fruit would you be?
A fruit. A fruit. I don't know, something bright and sweet. A little satsuma. Everybody loves a satsuma. You can put it in your
Absolutely
pocket
right.
and off you go. Yeah, a satsuma. Sweet, but sometimes with a bitter edge.
Excellent, excellent. I like that idea. Do you listen to music? Do you listen to podcasts when you're working? Is there kind of like...
Oh, yes, yeah.
Get into the zone in a certain way?
Well, I don't know. Music's always been a big thing. I used to be in band. I used to play the saxophones.
Oh, wow.
I haven't played for probably 10, 12 years, but when the kids were very little, I used to be in bands with my brother and other people. We used to do jazz festivals, but always found that jazz was the wrong kind of word for what we did.
Okay.
People sort of hear jazz and they switch off straight away. Where it encompasses such a broad spectrum of music. We were more sort of acid jazz, funk kind of thing. So, but I listen to everything and anything. Classical, Demis Roussos. You know, I've got on LPs out in the... I've got a little record player out there, so I'll go around the charity shops and try and find old vinyl. And it doesn't matter what it is, we'll put it on. Rod Stewart I've been into lately.
Really?
Yeah, Atlantic Crossing. You know, what a classic album, but that's what's been doing it for me lately. And some days are not good days. So you need something to get you out of that. And I think dance is a fantastic medium to lift the spirits. So I'll put something on that I'll know will make me start bopping around. And that usually helps get me out of perhaps a little bit of a down day.
Nice.
So music is good for the soul. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what it is, as long as it's done well. Listen to it. Yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree on that one. I tend to, when I want to get into the rhythm, for me, it's bossa nova. Find that rhythm works really well. It doesn't matter who's singing, what the track is. And a lot of it is in Portuguese, which I don't understand in the slightest. But just that kind of rhythm gets me. And I suddenly find it's 3 o'clock, it's 4 o'clock, and the day's gone by. And usually it means I haven't buggered anything up as well because I've been stuck in the rhythm.
This is it. This is what I find. And it's becoming a bit of a habit, I suppose. When I'm making something for a customer, whatever music is playing stays on repeat until that job is finished.
Okay.
Nice. Yeah. So sort of just before Christmas, one of them, I had Rachmaninoff, just can't say greatest hits because that's the wrong thing to say, but it was just a CD compilation.
Yeah.
And that stayed on for about 3 weeks. But it was that, you know, it's dark, like I said, usually late at night. And that was just on repeat and it got the job done. And sometimes you need that. It sort of, you recall then that music with a job you've done.
Yeah.
So it sort of takes you back. You're saying, oh, yes, I remember doing that ring for so-and-so. That's what I tend to do, whatever's playing.
Lots of jewelers obviously follow you on Instagram and they obviously followed you on the TV. And a lot of people are at the start of their career, what advice would you give people who see what you are doing, see the amazing work that you're creating? What advice would you give people who are just starting their jewelry making journey?
You've got to enjoy it, as we said earlier on. If you don't enjoy it, do something else. It still within jewelry, perhaps you could go down a different line, except be it costume and alternative materials rather than soldering and stone setting, things like that. There's lots of ways you can go. Don't be sort of defined by that one word, jewelry and fine jewelry. There are always branches off. That was a good thing with the class. It was an evening class for anybody over 16, but it was mainly retired ladies that would come along. And we started with basics, but once you've got the basics, you can go whichever way you like. It's however hard you want to take it. Because once you can cut, once you can file, once you can solder, that's pretty much all you need. It's just what you do with that. It's the same as a painter. Once they've worked out what they need to do with their paints, it doesn't keep you going in one direction. You can do lots of things, be it landscapes, portraits, modern art. It's just trying different things and don't be sort of kept on that one singular path. It's keep trying, keep enjoying the main thing. You've got to enjoy it. So just keep trying. As you said, things go wrong. That's how you learn.
Absolutely.
The good thing with us is that we can melt the silver down and start again. It doesn't matter. Just keep on trying.
But talking about, again, you know, trying different things. Are you still working in stained glass?
No.
Okay.
No. I've got a garage full of glass here. the last thing that I was about to start making was a Tiffany Magnolia 24-inch standard lamp.
Well, that would have taken months.
Got the moulds. Oh, yeah. Well, I bought all the glass, David.
Oh, my God.
The Tiffany replica, the Euroboroughs glass.
Yeah.
It was all here, and the jewellery started becoming more and more. We'd moved house and it's still out there in a box, and I just haven't had the heart to get back into it. I've done a few repairs. I've had a few people come and we've done a few repairs with it. But the last time I burnt myself really badly was repairing a stained glass panel. Somebody was trying to get hold of me on the phone. I made the mistake of answering it. And then I picked up the 100-watt soldering iron like a pen.
Shit.
And just burnt all my fingers. I didn't even think. I just picked it up like a pen out of the safety holder. Can you believe I took it out and put it in the other hand? And I haven't done anything. That was about 12, 14 months ago. And the skin is still thin now. So I haven't done much with it. Never say never.
No.
But the only glass I sort of work with now is the Ditchfield glass in the jewellery. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Which does bring me joy. Like I said, I just love working with the glass.
No, totally understand that one. So we know what you're good at. We know you're great at making jewellery. We know you're great at making stained glass windows. So what is Lee Appleby not good at?
Plumbing. I don't think I'm too bad with electrics, but apparently not. I'm a carpenter by trade. That's how I started out on the old YTS, was in the joiner's shop. But yeah, my wife won't let me near anything plumbing wise, other than clearing a drain.
Right.
And electrics, she doesn't trust me on electrics. And I think it was because in the old house, I think I changed a switch, and instead of the hall light coming on, the light underneath the stairs was coming on. I don't know what I did. I only changed the switch. So yeah, electrics. I'm not the best with maths.
I'll second that one.
Yeah. I was turned off maths in school in first year of secondary school, when they were sort of doing the times table. You had to stand up and they point at you and this and that. And I just froze. I didn't know it. I'm all right with maths now for what I need it for. And the technical drawing and things like that, because it was in a different form, was fine. It was just straight math. I just didn't get, which my son is a whiz on. That's, you know, that's what he did. His A-levels were stats and maths. Yeah. And yeah, no, maths is not a strong point.
Well, we've got a couple of minutes left. So where can people find you online? And can they visit you at the studio? Where might that be?
Yeah, to a certain degree. It's not far from home. I'm currently working a couple of days a week for another jeweller, Andrew Berry. So I'm at the bench and at the bench over there. But yeah, they can find me on my Instagram, Facebook, and the website. And everything is Jeweller Lee. Came up with the Jeweller Lee name. I did put it through all the people in the classes and friends and family. What do you think? Do you think it does sound a bit too silly? Because when you buy from me, you get a jewellery box, Jeweller Lee bag. So it's only when you say it out loud, because it reads well. And we managed to get the .com, the .co.uk, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. So we've covered all platforms, so there isn't any mistakes made when you're looking for me. So,
brilliant.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
And the YouTube. We've got the YouTube,
Jeweller
Lee,
as well. Indeed, you have. Yeah.
So we've got a few little bits on it. It's just finding time to put content on everything.
Yeah, never enough time. Well, listen, we are about to run out of time. So I want to say thank you so much for taking part and chatting with me today. It's been amazing. It's lovely to get a bit more insight into who you are. And
nice to see
you.
Yes. And chat again.
Yeah. And we will speak again soon, I'm sure. You take care.
Yes, we will, David. You take care. Enjoy your time over there.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed the episode and come back to us another couple of weeks for the next part. In the meantime, also thanks to Alfie Amadeus for the amazing track, Octopi, which is our theme music. See you soon. Bye-bye.